everyone. Can I just get everybody to stand up really quickly? It is late in the day. Let's do a quick stretch break. We're at APHA. Raise those arms up. Let's lean to the right. Lean to the left. Stretch them out to the side. How about some shoulder stretches? These are like the only ones I know. All right, high five somebody to the back of you. High five somebody in front of you. High five somebody across the aisle. Oh, I love all the love here. All right, that's the spirit. Thank you, everybody. Are you awake now? I figure this is the only way I can get your attention to the last 20 minutes of the day, so thank you for sticking in there with me. Just a shout out to all of my coworkers who couldn't be here today, but they all work very closely with me on what I'm going to talk to you about today, and I have no relationships to disclose. So we're going to kind of work on identifying some methods and tools of how the 84 movement works to engage youth on tobacco-related policy, and also how we get the youth to work in collaboration with adults in order to pass that policy. So the way the 84 is structured is we have what's called chapters across the state. So those are made up of 5 youth and 1 adult, or a lot of times more. Sometimes we have chapters that have up to 70 members in them that are like half of the high school and all of the athletes, and they just want to get involved. But they always have 1 adult and then several youth involved in them. We have 80 chapters across the state of Massachusetts right now and are looking to get at least 100 this year. So they can be in collaboration similarly with another group in the school, like a SAD chapter or a student council or something like that, or it can be its own group by itself. We work with the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. So the Massachusetts Department of Public Health has adult-led programs. The way Massachusetts is set up, it's kind of strange. We have what's called boards of health, or the health departments, in each of the 351 towns that are in Massachusetts. That always blows my mind because I'm not from there. But some of them are funded and some of them aren't. So Massachusetts Department of Public Health kind of hires community partnerships, which are a group of people that have a section of the state that they work on different things like OTP presentations and media presentations, just making sure that the tobacco message is out in the media. And then there's the youth component to it. So one of the examples of the youth programs through DPH is the 84. So where we cross, where the youth cross with the adults, is always really with policy, and we'll see why here. So the 84 is called the 84 because in 2007, when it was created through the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, 84% of the youth at that time did not smoke cigarettes in Massachusetts. That number has gone up. The number has gone up. So over the years, the number has decreased. And so our percent has gone up, and we haven't changed our name yet, and I don't think we're going to until we get to the 100, but we're waiting for that day to happen. And this year, the YRBS data and another survey that the Department of Public Health did showed that 89% of youth in Massachusetts don't smoke cigarettes. So the problem with that, as I assume is the case in many other states, is that while cigarette use has gone down, the OTP use in Massachusetts has gone up, or not necessarily gone up, but in this case, that more youth are using OTPs than cigarettes. So it's really an issue that we overlook, and I've heard a lot of people in Massachusetts say, you know, why are you working on tobacco still? Nobody smokes in Massachusetts, and it's really the case, at least in Boston. You hardly ever see somebody smoking. But that's where the problem is that people think our work is done, and it's very, very far from done. In fact, the industry is constantly coming up with all these new tactics in order for more youth to get hooked on these other tobacco products, and as you all, I'm sure, are battling with flavored products and e-cigarettes as well this year, it's far, far from over. So the Department of Public Health has a couple of policy priorities for this year, and that's where, again, the 84 really works in partnership with the adult-led programs. So this year we're focusing on flavored tobacco products, and there are actually a handful of cities in Massachusetts that have banned flavored tobacco products, and we expect to see that number really go up in the next couple of years. We also are working on electronic cigarettes, getting them regulated like tobacco products in the sense that they're in the smoke-free law in the municipality, and that minors can't buy them because Massachusetts still doesn't have a statewide law. And then finally, looking at the number of tobacco retailers in communities, and especially those with high smoking rates. So we have 24 cities in Massachusetts that we're calling our priority populations, which either have a high retail density, a retail store density in that town, or a high smoking population. And what we're doing is we're really trying to blast the media, we're trying to get the 84 chapters really involved in the policy efforts in those communities in order to try and take a crack at lowering the percentages in those towns. So what I'm going to talk about now is the model that is really used by the BEST initiative. If you haven't heard of that, I encourage you to look it up. It's a method called youth development. How many of you, just by show of hands, have heard of this model before? Okay, a couple of you. Have you used it? A couple of you? Yeah, okay. Well, good. Let's talk about it now. So the youth development approach really looks at youth as resources, not recipients. So instead of creating a program or a project that's for youth, make it by youth. Make it with youth. Make it so that youth actually are at the table and they're making decisions. Youth are very intelligent human beings, and when given the tools and the creativity that they have, or that they have innately inside of them, they can really turn a project into something way bigger than you initially thought that it could be. Also, youth development, a big definition that goes along with this is that prevention does not equal development. So while there are many ways to prevent something, youth development kind of takes it from a different angle, saying if you try to develop an adolescent in those years and try to give them leadership skills and presentation skills and all of those kinds of skills, then it will tackle a problem. So instead of just trying to prevent somebody from smoking, why don't you work with them on their leadership skills, and maybe that will lead to them not smoking. So here's the definition, and I'll just read it. A process by which young people develop positive developmental outcomes necessary for adolescence and adult life, based on their capacities, strengths, and formative needs. So here's kind of what I was talking about. If you work on things like confidence or organizing skills, then that could lead to an achievement outcome or a problem-free outcome. So another example is if you really want a youth to get a job, and you know it's important for that youth to get a job, you can talk to them all day and beat them with a stick and say, get a job, or you can work with them on their sense of responsibility, and through that, increase in sense of responsibility, they may get a job, and they may think that that job is really valuable and something that they should have, and that can tackle what you initially wanted to do in the first place. So in our policy work, we really work on creating synergy between youth and adults. So obviously youth and adults can bring different things to the table. And as Megan mentioned, I think it's important to realize that you need adults for some things. For example, a lot of times the adults are the ones with the cash. They have the community resources and the financial resources that youth may not necessarily have. They might have the administrative skills or the programming skills. And like she mentioned too, just the fact that it's the adults that do the data entry and that kind of thing, it's really nice for the youth to be able to be out there collecting the surveys, but then the adults are great to be able to do the data entry and kind of take things to the next step. And also, they have institutional knowledge and power, and that's not something that is going against you saying, oh, they're not knowledgeable. But in the case of passing policy, for example, this could be something that we do on a daily basis, and it's like second nature for us. But what we have to remember is that youth are like learners in the policy world, and we can give them some information and they can take it and run with it. Similarly, youth have things that adults don't. And, well, I shouldn't say all adults, but youth have a lot of passion. They have a lot of creativity. They have a lot of personal stories and know what's going on in their high schools and in their communities. And that's something that we don't necessarily have. You know, the other day was with our statewide leadership team, and one of them was telling a story about how he saw his teacher vaping in the coffee room. I mean, that's not something that I would necessarily know as an adult that that's actually happening in high school. So youth have these stories that are powerful, and they sometimes don't know how powerful they are until we can kind of draw that out. And that's something that hopefully is going to be in a testimony someday to a city council to try and pass some policy. So this creates this synergy or this energy between youth and adults that is really great when it comes to passing policy. So this is at Kick Butts Day this year, and here's an example of a youth who in the morning was just at the pep rally just screaming away, and then later in the day educating a legislator on e-cigarettes. They're very passionate spokespeople and are often underestimated, but we really need to remember all the new ideas and perspectives they can bring, and the fact that legislators listen. So some of the best practices of youth development in this theory. First of all, it's really never saying no to a youth. If they come up with some crazy idea to do a flash mob or some activism activity, and your immediate thought in your head is, there is no way we're going to be able to do this, you need to get that thought out of your head and think again. It should really be, okay, well, if this is what you want to do, then what do we need? How are you going to do it? What about this? What about that? And kind of get them to think creatively about what they want to do instead of shooting them down. Because the best way that you can stop them from being good advocates is to say no. But if you say, okay, how can we do it, then that's going to further motivate them to keep going. Another thing is relationships. I'll just touch on a few of these. A lot of times adults have a hard time with not taking over. You know, youth, you get them into a room, sometimes you might ask them a question, you might ask them to brainstorm, and there's silence. Silence is uncomfortable. So, even for adults, silence is uncomfortable. But just if you give them that time and space, then somebody will jump in. You don't always have to be the one to kind of fill in the blank and fill in the answer. Just give them the time, give them that awkward silence, and they'll come right to the forefront and come up with something to fill it. Also, holding high expectations is one that I think is really important to remember in youth development, because if you hold a low expectation for a youth, that's where they're going to meet you. If you hold a high expectation for them, that's also where they're going to meet you. Just think that they are the most creative, capable human beings on the face of the planet, and they will be. If you ask them to write a testimony to talk at a public hearing, they're capable of that. They are in high school, they write papers and presentations all the time. If you ask them, hey, we need to pass this policy, that it's not fair that people under the age of 18 can buy e-cigarettes in Lawrence, so what can we do? I guarantee you they're not just going to stop it. Let's write a testimony. They're going to come up with some really great ideas of how to educate the community and get the job done. So have high expectations of them. And also just to be patient, because like I said earlier, they're the learners in a lot of this. And even though we've been doing it over and over for so many years, and it might feel repetitive for us or just that we're burnt out from working in the tobacco control field, they're not. This is a new thing. It needs to be sexy for them. It needs to be something that you're motivated by, because your motivation will also rub off on them. And then trust them. Trust youth to be able to make their own decisions, to be able to carry out projects, and most of all, to be able to talk about their own experience. Because, as I mentioned earlier with the vaping and the copy room story, those stories are so critical in passing policy and knowing what's going on, that we need to draw those out from them. And another example that just came to my head, in Lawrence, that city that I just mentioned, which is a really poor, poor city that's got a high smoking rate, I did a training with them and brought a bunch of OTPs and showed them to these teens. And this girl said she had a blunt wrap in her hand. She's like, oh, yeah, I see those all over the ground in Lawrence Park. And it's like the legislators probably aren't frequenting Lawrence Park very much to know that there are these blunt wrap wrappers on the ground. But that story alone of just knowing that she's a high school student, she goes to this park all the time, there are blunt wrap wrappers on the ground, like that's something that's important for the legislators to know. So just trust them. They know what they see in their high schools. And then finally, just looking at ongoing evaluation and celebration. So with policy, as you all know, sometimes it doesn't pass. So always thinking with the youth creatively of, okay, if this isn't going to pass, what are we going to do? How are we going to evaluate it? What did we do right? What could we do better next time? And then also encouraging them not to be discouraged if a policy doesn't pass. You know, it's very disheartening if youth are working on something and then nobody listens and then it doesn't get passed. But think about the next steps. Always have that plan B in mind and have them think about that before it hits them. And then they get defeated and then they don't want to work on it anymore. And similarly, if something does happen that's good, then celebrate that. If there's a letter to the editor that's published, or if there's a new 84, or if there's a new group in the community that's working on the issue, then celebrate those little victories. So a couple of examples from chapters in the 84. The Hope Coalition is from Worcester, Massachusetts. Yes, that's how you pronounce it. It took me forever to. But from Worcester, and they basically went around and saw that this is the problem that they were having in their community. They saw a ton of litter on the ground. They saw these mini markets that were covered in tobacco ads and gas stations that had promotional sales, and they were frequenting these places all the time. And these teens said, well, this is not right. What are we going to do about this? So they did a photo voice project where they went to all 300 stores that sold tobacco products in Worcester, and they worked with the Worcester Department of Public Health. So this is where the youth-adult collaboration comes in, because the health department was able to provide that list of retailers, and then they went and did this project where they could document all of the ads that were at these stores. So they entered this into a GIS and then overlaid the data onto neighborhood-based information before they analyzed it. So they knew they needed to get the facts in order to pass any kind of policy in Worcester. Once they analyzed it, the youth came up with the findings and recommendations, and they created these different maps. And I know it's hard to see what the different ones are, but the first one is the percent minority of population in relation to tobacco vendors. So minority would be Black, Asian, or Hispanic and Latino. So they mapped out the tobacco retailers and how it related to the minorities in those areas. And then the second map is the number of tobacco ads per vendor in relation to the percentage of youth under the age of 18. So then looking at this on the bottom right here, this is an example of how many tobacco ads or how many tobacco ads there were near schools. So these pink things are schools here. And you can see the bigger the dot, the more tobacco ads there were. And they came up with this this prediction that a 9% decrease in the density of stores that sell tobacco would lead to a 13% decrease in the rate of smoking. So then they took it to the next level and figured, okay, what can we do to get this done? And as I mentioned, youth are super creative. And before CVS took tobacco out of their stores, the youth were already at the forefront protesting, figuring out how to get the message out to the public that it's not okay that you can get lung cancer pills in the back and cancer sticks in the front. And they were smart enough to be able to do visibility events and activism events to get the message out to the community. Eventually, they did pass an ordinance and reduce the number of ads in Worcester, and the ads went from an average of 7 ads before the ordinance down to 3.9 ads after the ordinance. So it decreased the number of ads drastically, and then they continue, present tense, to do evaluation to see how this is going on over the years and seeing if the tobacco ads continue to go down. Similar study in Lynn. This is a place where there's a lot of political turmoil, and so not much policy is moving, but they're also taking this in strides and mapping out the schools and their proximity to tobacco retailers and planning to take that to city council as well. And then finally, a city, Plymouth, Massachusetts, which should ring a bell if you ever took history class, but Plymouth, Massachusetts was absolutely not going to pass any policy. In fact, the adult programs that worked with DPH were so tired of working with Plymouth or trying to work with Plymouth because it was like talking to a brick wall. They were so sick of hearing from DPH that that DPH said, or well, the programs that work with DPH said, you know what, we can't do it anymore. We just can't. We're tired. We've been working and trying, and it's just not going anywhere. So then the youth stepped up. The youth created an 84 chapter in Plymouth, and basically like this, it happened. And they went and testified to the Board of Health. The Board Pals listened to them. They couldn't believe the stories that the youth had brought to the table, and they ended up passing the model regulations that included everything that you would ever want to include in regulations in a town that otherwise wouldn't have done that. So again, just really thinking about youth power and how youth can really bring a lot to the table, especially when working effectively with adults to pass policy. So just give them, what's that expression? Give them an inch and they'll take a mile or something like that. You know what I mean, right? Okay. Thank you so much. Health Resources in Action has a lot of trainings. We do trainings nationally on anything relating to policy. So if you're interested to have us come work with you, please, please contact me. Thank you. That's a great question. So the HOPE Coalition has been an 84 chapter since the beginning. So they've been around since 2007, and they actually work with in collaboration with a college that has a GIS major. So yeah, that map was pretty intricate, but the youth actually came up with the idea for which maps to create. To answer your question, I think it was about 2 years. And what I didn't mention about the HOPE Coalition is that they ended up also passing a pharmacy ban of tobacco sales in general, and so that actually eliminated 10% of all the tobacco retailers in Worcester. But yeah, 2 years, and they're continuing, like I said, to continue the research on all of the ads as well to see what kind of a decrease that has, or an impact that has in on smoking rates. And now what they're working on this year is a flavor ban. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Don't be shy. Okay, thank you so much.